headed back in. Condon! A second of the game for Van Veen, and he is loving it. Cornelius on the edge of the ball. Toro! How special is that for his first Motherwell goal? For Slatnick, and he's shot away! It's a fantastic strike! And it's thundered in by Liam Grimshaw! What a moment for him! The fans' favourite!
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight, myself and Pepe are delighted to welcome along James Jarvie, possibly better known as Jaffa. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing well, buddy. Doing well. Long time listener, first time caller.
Well, that's it. And one that we're delighted to have on. Been saying for the last couple of weeks that we're looking as we move into the end of the season. There's so many games just now that it'll be good to get some more voices on as we approach the business end, so to speak. And we've got quite a lot to talk about tonight. Disappointing week, I suppose, from a Motherwell perspective. A 1-1 draw rescued at St Mirren. Was followed by a 4-0 defeat against Celtic. Pepe, welcome along, mate. It's always a hard ask coming up against either side of the old firm. But we've now got to a point where it's going to these games, looking forward to the next one already. I just don't have any belief that we can get a result. And more often than not, just now, especially at Fir Park, that seems to be exactly the case.
It's a strange times where we're currently going through a period of years we're talking now since we last had a league victory against Old Firm. I mean, you only need to look back to times of Dougie Arnett when he's getting mentioned in books as being the most tricky opponents and stuff like that. But it just seems as if it's powder puff now. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that the same Celtic team was up in Ross County and there was pitch invasion going on to the last minute. That being said, I would have hated that to have happened in Saturday. Sunday. We were well beaten by the better team. I don't think we deserved anything from the game. We've been crying out for a different formation, but I didn't think for a minute that would have been the formation. But at the end of the day, we didn't deserve it. They looked really strong. And even if we had taken a chance, a half chance, whatever, I still think they had another couple of gears to go through. So there wasn't really any complaints. I don't think there's many Motherwell fans that, although we did play poorly, they played well. And when the two things combine, there's only going to be one conclusion, I think.
Jaffa, it was a case of roll up for another game of Alexander Bingo. And I think the manager has to take a fair bit of the heat for what transpired on Sunday, because especially in the position of fullback, we were absolutely obliterated. And it was clear as day, even before the first goal went in, that we had a real problem, particularly in that left-back area. One of my mates described that Jake Carroll was basically defending at Tim Hortons across the road. I think that's a fairly accurate description.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm probably slightly, I know that I'm a lot older than you, Andy. I think I'm a wee bit older than Pepe, and it's I don't get as upset about these things anymore, because I've seen sort of Celtic and Rangers over the years gradually get better and better than us. And obviously Pepe talked about the Dougie Arnott years, and to be honest, it's like at that stage that there wasn't a great deal between it. But if you look at the games for Sunday, you had first against fourth and second against third that kind of ended up with a 9-0 aggregate. So as a free hit, but you go into these games and you really need to for them to have a real off day and us to be totally on it. And as you said, kind of with the sort of the formation sort of that we went with. To be honest, my thoughts of Carroll was that I don't think he had an idea what he was meant to do. I don't know that he sort of knew kind of where he was actually meant to be playing. Whether he was meant to be sort of playing a left back, sort of trying to get forward, or playing sort of in midfield and kind of having cover behind him. Because, obviously, sort of two of the goals came directly from him. kind of basically no tracking back or kind of no being caught out of position and sort of having the ball played in behind them. And it's, as I say, I just don't know. I think all season we've kind of, I've been worried about the fullback position. I'm not in the Nathan McGinley sort of as terrible bandwagon, but it's I genuinely think since Alexander came in, I think what he asks his fullbacks to do is tuck in, which leaves the space out there for them to do what they want. And we've been caught out a few times, and obviously kind of the fullback gets the blame, but it's I genuinely think they've been told what to do. They've been coached into doing it. It wasn't great to watch.
Yeah, Pepe, I think that's pretty much nail hitting the head there. There's a thing around Jake Carroll where people seem to have went full circle now after really kind of clamouring for him being back in the team. They're now realising that he does have his frailties. That said, he came in as a centre-back, really, when he returned to the team, and he hasn't been playing his familiar position. The results aren't going so well since he's come back either, so there might be a wee bit of a confidence issue there. I just think that Alexander's had a team there that went to St Mirren and scored late on. We were a wee bit buoyed by that. It gave us a wee bit of hope, albeit 24 hours later, Celtic steamrolled Rangers, but that was the game before. It just gave us a wee bit of hope that we could at least put in a performance. Instead, it didn't work out at all. It was flat, and it was really in keeping with some of our performances since the winter break, where we just don't seem to have that intensity. We don't seem to have that attacking threat either. Hard to analyse a game against Celtic and really be too harsh on anybody involved, but it's just there's something missing just now. The defence doesn't look very good. We don't look very good going forward either. Joe Effort came off the bench, and there was a point where he got the ball. I think it was his first touch. He's about 50 yards from goal, and he got his head up and realised there was no one in front of him. It's just so negative and really quite poor to watch.
I mean, I totally agree, and even further emphasised when we were travelling through to Paisley last week when I seen the team. I know we're going to talk about the St Mirren game, but when I seen that, the complete change in formation, I hate any team playing with one striker up front. I don't think it suits any of our forward players to play like that at all. But just coming back to the Jake Carroll situation, I think I used this example a couple of weeks ago that Steve Robinson used when Motherwell fans, probably include myself in that, were clamouring for Gil Bigramana to be brought back into the squad or the starting lineup, and he said that a player is always better when he's not playing, and then when he is playing, he's the worst player in the world. And I think we fell foul to that. And I think Jaffa also raises quite an interesting point that, and you've raised it as well, and I probably find myself guilty of this, that McGinley has come in for real criticism. Where I sit in these stand, even when he's on the ball and he's not doing anything wrong, he's getting criticised, or he's getting the kind of a oohs and ahs of what is he going to do now. And as soon as he doesn't play a perfect pass or a perfect make the perfect challenge, then it's straight on the back of him. Whereas Saul Sondre Johansson can do something similar and he'll get clapped. Now, whether it's to do with personality or whatever, I have to say, I don't think Nathan McGinley is a Motherwell class left back. I don't think that he can play centre half. So going forward, what frustrated me was that he changed McGinley into the centre half, left centre half position when Carroll had played there and played pretty well. If he was going to change it, we've got Oyala, who has looked kind of pretty assured when in the majority of the games that he's played. If he was going to change it, surely you play a centre half and his natural position, because the majority of us think Nathan McGinley as a left back. I know he has played there, but that was what really frustrated me. If I'm honest with you, I think looking at that, if I was any manager at all, you would look, the weakest point of our team is in that left hand side. The two weakest players in our team is Jake Carroll and Nathan McGinley, in my opinion. And everything's going to go down that side. I feel, if we go back to the Hibs game in the first game of the season, I can remember watching McGinn and acres and acres of room. Najafa has said, is it the way that, that Alexander asks of his fullbacks to tuck into the centre half and leaves us acres of room, which if you've not got the pace to get back, and I really think that is what's missing. Whether it's the skill of the player, the calibre of the player, I don't know. And that's potentially, Stephen O'Donnell's come under criticism as well, which I've pointed at. And whether that's the issue, I don't know. Where do we go for tomorrow? I mean, who plays it left back? For me, it's got to be McGinley. Carroll dropped him out and Oyala coming back in, but I would rather that we played a four at the back rather than this back five, because it's kind of anti-football in my opinion.
We'll go on to Dundee United a wee bit further down the line. Just a final one on the fullback situation. I know I moved it on to talk about the strikers as well. I think that Nathan McGinley in the second half noticeably was suffering out there. I think after making a few mistakes, his head was down, he looked uncomfortable in his surroundings, and I can only imagine that some of the criticism is now getting to him. I think it's been very harsh how much he's been singled out over the last, possibly the last 3 or 4 months, to be fair now, pretty much since Tannadice, where, yes, he made a few errors, and yes, as you say, he's not particularly good, but he's at times he can be a steady Eddie as well. I know Motherwell were trying to drum up the facts and figures and that he's very high up in aerial duels. And during that first half against Celtic, he made quite a few interceptions where I think other players would have been applauded, as you say. But because of who he is, he just doesn't seem to get any sort of reception from the supporters. And I think at that point you're almost beat, because, and it's not the first time and it won't be the last time that Motherwell fans have almost kind of driven a player out of the football club. But I see that as the only way that when McGinley gets to the end of his deal, he'll want out of there. He certainly didn't want to be on that park from about 55 minutes onwards on Sunday. And that's why I kind of doubt that he's going to remain in the team much longer, because I think he's just a man absolutely shattered. It could have been turned around for him, but I think the fans have got so far and so much on his back over the time that it's just, yeah, I don't see it being recoverable.
The only thing that I'll say, though, is that you like to judge post-match and social media. Well, I certainly do, particularly Twitter. And I thought I was really surprised at the amount of positivity that came. I actually read somebody said if it wasn't for McGinley that it would have been more, and that the other two centre-halves actually were worse than him. Now, whether that was because everyone was coming down the left-hand side or not, for me, I just don't think he's good enough, and I don't think that there's much that he can do now that's going to turn that around. I've said this before, I think at the end of the season for him personally, and for us as a club, the best decision would be for him to move on. But let's not forget, this left-back position has been an issue with Motherwell since Stevie Hamill. So everybody that's coming into this left-back position, I say we obviously had Tony Straker, who nearly fitted the bill, but we've got, I do say that in jest, we've had this issue. I think for some time, Jake Carroll was possibly thought that it was going to be satisfactory as much as I would go. Hence the reason why he got a kind of lengthy contract. But on that performance on Saturday, it's back to square one. And it's a position that will probably be McGinley's until the end of the season. And it really needs filled, and filled with a decent left back.
Jaffa, on Sunday, the manager made a triple sub at half time. I appreciate that we were 3-0 down, but do you think that alluded to how frustrated and disappointed he was with the first half performance? And I guess it's worth mentioning as well that the first goal came after 28 minutes. So we had sort of held firm. There was a couple of good saves from Liam Kelly, but we had a wee spell just before they scored as well where the high press was, I wouldn't say giving us success, but it was giving us a wee bit more of the ball and we were further up the pitch, which was definitely a good thing because the majority of the game felt like it was played in our third.
I mean, obviously, sort of the change that he made kind of also sort of changed the formation and went back to the kind of trusty old 4-3-3. Now, sort of just sort of quickly sort of finishing off on the fullbacks. It's like obviously the formation that we started with on Sunday, and to be honest, the 4-3-3 that we've been playing all season, it kind of exposes our fullbacks because the sort of we're, at times it seems as if we're kind of lacking a man in midfield to actually get over and cover cover in front of the fullbacks. And since Tony Watts left, we don't have anybody sort of that's willing to actually get back and cover from up front like Tony Watt used to do. Obviously, when Tony Watt was through the middle, KVV sometimes came back and did it. But Roberts and Amalusa and Woolery are basically kind of leaving sort of the fullbacks out in an island as well. So I think it's the most difficult position to play in our team for the full season. I think I agree with what you've said that I don't think McGinley would fancy sort of staying even if he was offered another contract. And obviously sort of when you have a look online, it's like even when the team's announced, it's like folk are getting into his ribs before a ball's kicked, and he's got to sort of pick up in that. But that's not helping anybody. But I think kind of when we changed, I actually thought it was a mistake taking Kevin Van Veen off at half time because we were changing to a 4-3-3. Obviously had no idea what to expect from Efford, had never seen him play. Had only sort of seen wee clips of him. Kind of one of the goals that he scored, and it's like I've no idea why it was in his showreel because somebody else did all the work and he's just sort of ran in and tapped it in as the boy kind of crossed it to him. But I was really impressed with him, to be honest, when he came on, because as you said, he did get his head up. He looked quite confident in the ball, seems to know where the goal is. And kind of when we went 4-3-3 at the start of the second half, I think it was probably because Celtic were 3-0 up, because they did the same against Rangers on the Wednesday night, where the game was won and they weren't really sort of trying to extend it, knew that they could if they had to. And sort of we had a sort of good wee spell at the start of the second half as well. And as you said, before they scored, we did have some semblance of kind of chasing them about, sort of playing the high press. But let's get it out of the way. Kind of Celtic were very, very good, and it's the first thing I sort of saw in person, kind of being able to kind of watch everything that was going on. And to be honest, the movement that you saw from Celtic, it was pretty irresistible, to be honest. It was kind of people weren't just making runs like trying to get in behind or kind of trying to get down the lines. It's sort of in the middle of the park. They were making diagonal runs across so that kind of people, so the person on the ball could actually pass the ball into their feet, kind of knowing that kind of any challenge was going to be a foul. So I was very impressed with Celtic. I think that's an evolving for me as a football fan, because I could never ever sort of admit that before. But now that I'm kind of 50, it's you can look at these things and just think there wasn't anything we could have done in Saturday, because we just don't have the players that can play them at that type of thing. And there was no way that we could have kind of kept that high press up for any longer than the sort of 15, 20 minutes that we did. Just kind of finally on the Celtic thing, I was actually kind of quite impressed with Postecoglou at the end of the game. I've seen him doing it sort of on the telly, where he makes time to go around and speak to every member of the opposition team. I think that's a touch of class. And I've seen it when they've not got the result as well. So I'm sure that'll get knocked out of him if he's there for any length of time, and he'll be out sort of complaining about refs and kind of calling his hammer throwers and stuff like that if he's there for a couple of seasons. But I thought Kelly was great. Can I just say that I don't know that there was anything we could have done in Saturday, Sunday that would have got as a result. But
the thing is, we couldn't actually get close enough to them to be hammer throwers on Sunday. I think that almost goes without saying that they are a very good side, and certainly the difference between the game in October and the game there at Fir Park, night and day. It was 4-0 going on, however many they wanted. And albeit we were quite unlucky with the fourth goal coming back off McGabby and spinning into the net, but after that they had one off the post and a few half chances as well. So yeah, a disappointing day. And we came into that game on the back of the 1-1 draw at St Mirren. Pepe, it was one that we rescued with almost the last kick of the ball. A game that I thought we performed pretty well in at times. We controlled proceedings for the best part, but we'd go a goal down with 10 minutes to go. Brilliant to see Ross Tierney making an impact, his first goal for the club. Big goal. I thought that it was almost inevitable then that he would be in the team for the Celtic game. But let's start on that one. Tierney getting his first goal. He's made a very decent impact since arriving and making his debut against Morton just about 2.5 weeks ago now.
I thought I'm going to be honest and say I didn't think he had his best game against St Mirren until he scored that brilliant goal. Effort was there. But I just didn't feel that. I think it was difficult for him with the formation and stuff like that when he came on. But he kind of take away the finish, and he has looked as if he is going to be a good player, although I do think that he needs to improve physicality. Again, the game, I actually enjoyed it. And again, reflecting on social media, people were saying we were terrible, we didn't offer anything. I felt as if we were by far the better team. And again, I was really frustrated when they scored. Although Liam Kelly, again, pulled off some amazing 2-1 save in particular, was out of this world, the one where the header came in for Richard Tate. How he saved it, I'll never know. But I actually quite enjoyed the game, and the celebrations at the end were just, it was great. And it was even more comical when you see some of the Millwall fans and the St Mirren fans actually throwing a few punches at each other on the pitch. The one thing that changed my mind on that game in particular was Richard Tate. For me, Richard Tate, when he was at Millwall, was a cracking guy. I remember him during COVID doing workouts, and he seemed to really take to the club. He then had that horrific challenge in Liam Donnelly, and he thankfully made an arse of himself at the end when Wilder won the ball back and Tierney slotted it away. But I don't think he's covered himself in glory, Richard Tate. He seems to be really up for it when he plays us, and there's a bitter taste in his mouth, and I've noticed it, which is disappointing, because I'm not one that would automatically boo a player that comes back to us. But I think he's got a real dislike for Motherwell now. In comparison to Charles Dunn, when we were always scored at the end, and he actually looked up and clapped at the Millwall fans. Whereas Richard Tate, obviously, was annoyed with himself straight down the tunnel. So get it right up him. But all in all, again, I think if you look at that game, it was similar to kind of Ross County. Luckily, this time we come back, we were in charge of the game, and they score a goal at a crucial time, 80-odd minutes. Luckily, we've got the time to come back, but it seems to be a trait that the game's going against us at the moment. But it was good. The celebrations, as I said, were brilliant. And hope you enjoyed it, Richard, if you're listening.
I think you're being a wee bit harsh there, comparing it to Charlie Dunn, especially because Charlie Dunn was rehabbed all the way through his injury at Motherwell, and then, albeit it wasn't offered a long-term contract, but it gave him the platform to get his move to St Mirren, and I've seen quite a few St Mirren fans saying that he's been one of their most consistent performers. I actually quite like the boy Fraser. I liked him at County as well. And when he went to St Mirren, I thought that would be a pretty decent signing. I think they've got quite a nice mix at the back with the experience of Shaughnessy as well, and the goalkeeper, Almick from Rangers, seems to do pretty well for them as well. He's made a number of good saves on Saturday when they beat Hibs. So yeah, they're quite well set out, and they let us have the ball for quite long spells, Jaffa. Do you think that was almost knowing that we're maybe lacking that confidence? You could see the relief when that goal went in, because I think there has been a few games where we've had the better of it. For example, Hibs at home, the majority of the Ross County game until the sending off turned it on its head. It was almost a kind of elation that followed that equalising goal. Firstly, because it came so late on in the game. But again, I think it was to a certain degree because we hadn't lost a game that we should have won, but we weren't leaving with nothing, put it that way.
I totally, Andy, it's funny. It's I think sort of kind of now that sort of people are buying into the money ball aspect of kind of sport, it's certainly something that kind of, if you look at the analytics of the games that kind of we played under Alexander, it's kind of games that we've won and won comfortably. We've had like 33% possession, so it's like I think a kind of real good tactic for an opposing team of us is just let us have the ball, because we don't really know what to do with it. It's no sort of in our game makeup, but as you have both said, I thought we were comfortably the better team against them. And as has happened a couple of times this season, we kind of lose a goal, and we lose a goal at a set piece. And it's a real sickener, because, I mean, obviously, Gogic is probably the weakest St Mirren player on the park, and he's winning a header in our box. I'm not entirely sure who it is that's meant to be marking him, because there seemed to be, obviously, he kind of got lost, and it's Donnelly who goes up and half-heartedly makes a challenge into the back of him. But I don't see how you can let a player, even a wee player like that, kind of run free inside your box for a set piece. But I genuinely don't know kind of what to sort of make of things like that, because as I said, I thought we were comfortably a better team, just didn't take any of the chances that we created. Looking at the sort of our former players, I kind of remember that there was an issue with Tate when he left. I don't know kind of whether we sort of made him an offer and then took the offer away, or kind of changed the offer, but he certainly went away. And he went away like having had a great time at Motherwell, and sort of Motherwell fans really embracing him, and he kind of turned on us immediately. And that's fair enough. If he thinks he's been wronged, then that's fair enough. But I thought it was a nasty challenge. Surprised there hasn't been anything, because obviously there was a trial by Sports Scene, but there doesn't seem to have been anything come out of it. I think kind of probably Donnelly let him away with it a wee bit by not going down and rolling about, making the most of it, as other players would do against us. But kind of looking at the two of them, obviously Tate should have been sent off in the first half. But looking at Charles Dunn, there was a couple of times where Kevin Van Veen outran him, which that shocked me, because I always thought Charles Dunn was blessed with pace. That was the one thing, wasn't he? Maybe wasn't he the greatest guy, but he sort of always got out of things with Motherwell through his pace. And it's when I sort of seen Kevin Van Veen sort of lining up to sort of take him on with kind of long balls and stuff, I thought, no chance. But there was a couple of times that he outpaced them, which was amazing. But and as for the goal, Tierney takes it really well, and it was really good that Woolery sort of nicks it back off of Tate. Not entirely sure kind of the ball that he played into the box was meant for Tierney. Kind of, I'm not entirely sure where he was trying to put it, but it was a fantastic finish for Tierney. And I totally agree with Pepe when I had made a wee note when he said you were going to talk about Tierney. It's like I had sort of made a note saying that he could really do with a Lee McCulloch style off season, bringing away and coming back bulked up. Obviously, he's not going to come back anywhere near as big as Lee did, but I think just a wee bit more upper body strength, and I think sort of things look good for him for what I've seen so far.
Andy, go and explain to me how I'm being harshing in Richard Tate. I'm surprised at that.
No, I said it was a harsh comparison.
But I don't get that, though. Because I think it's the way you conduct yourself. It doesn't matter about the way that I think the whole thing was that Motherwell, he claimed that Motherwell had changed the contract offer as a result of COVID. Then Alan Burrows, as he normally does, came out and explained the situation, that there was a deadline, and the deadline that then it passed. Richard Tate then panicked because of COVID and then tried to go back on it. So I think he's been a bit snaky and then tried to make it Mullerow or the bad guys. And every game that I've seen him, I always feel as if he puts a wee bit of dig into his challenges. He always, I mean, that challenge, I'm not going to say it's the worst challenge I've ever seen, but it's certainly a red card. And as Jaffa said, there's absolutely nothing been made of it. If Donnelly went off injured, I think there'd be more made of it. It was just lucky that he pulled away from it. I don't expect him to pull out a challenge because he used to play for Mullerow, but even his comments after the game, I read a kind of couple of reports in the St Mirren side of things, and this came across as being, do you know what, I really dislike Mullerow. So I really have a kind of dislike for him now, which is sad, because I remember standing talking to him after the semi-final against Aberdeen at Fir Park, and he was down-to-earth guy and seemed to really, really love it. So I don't know if there's a wee bit of bitterness in him, but as I said before, get it right up him.
I can see exactly where you're coming from, but I think that you've got to remember as well that he was part of Stephen Robinson's hammer throwers. I don't know whether he's actually changed up his game a great deal, or we just notice it more when it's against us rather than going for us. I must admit, I was absolutely delighted that he was the one that gave the ball away for the equalising goal, but that was only surrounded around the fact that he made the shocking tackle in Donnelly. It was just a what goes around comes around type scenario, and thankfully Liam as well, a player that's had a fair share of injuries over the last 2 years really, was able to get back up and continue, because it was a shocker. We'll move on and discuss the Dundee United game, which comes tomorrow night. It's another massive one, Jaffa. The games are coming thick and fast, and I think they're building in importance, everyone that passes as well just now, because we've not been able to get that result since the turn of the year. We're on a very similar run to the one that we had from early October that ended with a 2-0 victory against Aberdeen at Pittodrie. I think that one went on six. We're currently five without a win in the league as it stands. It's a tough one. We know that Tannadice has never been an easy place to go. There'll be the added element of Tony Watt most likely being playing against us as well. It's hard to tell what we'll do in terms of team selection, but you look at that league table, we've had so many bits of luck when it comes to results in recent weeks, because everything seems to be falling for us. But what is noticeable about the table as well is that the likes of even Ross County are only a couple of points off the top six. So between 10th and ourselves in 4th, there's not a great deal of room for manoeuvre. And you could see these positions being very changeable over the next couple of weeks as we approach that split.
I was going to say, when you said that kind of the results are going for us, I'm not entirely sure about that, because that was the point I was going to make, that kind of, although sort of Hibs, Aberdeen, Dundee United haven't been taking advantage of kind of us not doing so well, it's obviously Livingston, St Mirren and Ross County have, and it's like, it's kind of now, we're now only sort of 7 points clear of the team in 10th. Obviously, sort of, we've got a big game. Obviously, the Dundee United game is a massive game. It's a game that I've got the fear for. Obviously, kind of, you go into games where Tony Watt's now not scored in 9 games. Dundee United have only got one win in 90 minutes in the last 12 games. And these are the things that kind of, these stats always go against us when a team needs a win, a player needs a goal. So I do go into it with a wee bit of fear, and kind of, as you say, it's the team selection tombola will be getting a right good rumble up before Tuesday night. But I mean, generally there's nothing to fear from them, obviously, sort of apart from those stats that kind of they're not doing well. Tony Watt hasn't scored a goal. We shouldn't go into it with any fear, and it's obviously you take the Celtic game out of it, and it's like, I think we're playing some decent football, and it's obviously, kind of, you go back to, even go back to the Hearts game where we played quite well, and it's had some of the Kevin Van Beane's chances had sort of just slid the other side of the post, then it would have been a completely different kind of outlook. And I think at some point our luck's got to turn, and kind of some of these chances have got to go in. But you've got no idea what formation we're going to play. You've got no idea what the team selection is going to be. Kind of, especially with the substitutes that he made. Don't know whether kind of that was on Sunday was in light of the game that we've got in Wednesday, or kind of whether he was disgusted with some of the kind of performance he was getting. So it'll be interesting to see what the team selection is kind of at like 6:30 tomorrow night. But you go into the game kind of fearing what Tony Watt might do to us, and fearing what kind of Dundee United could do, and the fact that they need a win. But you obviously go into it as well, and kind of you look at what kind of who Rangers are playing, who Celtic are playing. You expect them to pick up wins, and a win would be very welcome tomorrow night. But we'll see what happens.
Pepe, United fans have been all over the likes of Pye and Ball, everyone on social media bemoaning their lack of creativity, and even some of them suggesting that time's running out for the manager. They're not in any sort of forum either. If we look at it from a positive point of view and disregard that first game back against Ross County, since then, I suppose we've only lost the games that we would expect to lose. The trip to Tynecastle and the home game against Celtic. This is a winnable game, and one that I'm sure that everyone within the squad will believe that we can go and get something from. The opportunity to move 6 points above Dundee United, albeit I've referenced the fact that the likes of County and Tent are seven behind, St Mirna four behind, Livingston four behind, Aberdeen the same. To go 6 points above United with only, seven games left before the split, it would be a very, very significant result, and maybe one of these ones that just puts us back on track going into the Scottish Cup game, and then another really big league game against Aberdeen as well.
I don't think we can look away from the fact that we hadn't won this year, and if we had even taken the points at Ross County, we would have been kind of pretty happy to go up there and get a draw. But I'm going up there tomorrow night fully hoping, and I wouldn't say expecting, but a victory isn't too far away from us. I think the whole Tony Watt factor adds a bit of spice to it. Certainly, I'm sure he'll get a few pleasantries for our support, probably deservedly so. And that definitely adds to the game. But as you say, and as Jaffa said, the league is now completely open. And we can kind of put a wee bit of closure on that openness, if that makes sense, be getting these 3 points tomorrow. I'm actually really looking forward to the game. I think we've all agreed that we've not really been playing that poorly. Whereas before, our complaint was that we were kind of scraping these wins and not playing very well, and it seems to have went full circle. So I'll happily take a shit fest tomorrow and come away with 3 points. But again, I have to say, I kind of well done to Dundee United. I'm going up there, although it's £26 for me, I still think that's too much. Ben, who's 11, he's getting a ticket for a fiver, so we're quick enough to call out teams like Livingston. But for a pricing point of view, it's manageable for, and it's better than what some expect for a family to go to the football.
I would actually like to add to that as well, please. I lost my wallet. Now, it actually came, I was in Newcastle last week, and in the one day that I was in Newcastle, I managed to come home without my wallet. I didn't actually realise that until the weekend. Make of that what you will, how many times I got my wallet out. But it came through the door today. But on Sunday, I had to go to the ticket office and try and work out how to get my season cards back. Now, it's a busy game. There was a lot of Celtic fans milling about hoping to go into the ticket office and get tickets for the Motherland. They were dealing with all of that with great professionalism and managed to sort out the season cards in a matter of minutes. So massive thanks. I didn't catch the... Mary was definitely there. I didn't catch the other lady's name in the office, but very, very efficient and brilliant to see, because you can guarantee that when things aren't going right in that side of the game, then they get a lot of stick, and given the amount of games and the fact that there's very rarely pay-at-the-gate games anymore as well, that they're very, very overworked. So, yeah, I was very impressed by that and very grateful. Well, at least until 1:30 and the game started. But, yeah, it was really, really professional and really, really impressive. Absolutely no idea what my next point was, because Pepe started talking about ticketing. But the United game will be followed by Scottish Cup. The big games keep on coming, as we're kind of getting like a broken record, but we're referencing that every week. Jaffa, it doesn't need any kind of build-up. A Scottish Cup game at 3:00 on a Saturday afternoon against Aberdeen. A chance to make a quarter-final. A game against a side that we've beaten twice already this season and aren't in good form. Should be a big crowd inside Fir Park. It makes for a fascinating cup tie, and one that I suppose will be hard to gauge until we've got through our respective fixtures tomorrow night, but one that I'm certainly looking forward to.
Oh, definitely. Scottish Cup games are always that little bit special, and kind of obviously sort of with it being our second round of it, if you will, and obviously kind of it can lead to great things. And to be drawn against Aberdeen, I went through a kind of range of emotions when we were first drawn against them. It was like, to me, it stood out as a tie of the round, trying to look at it as a neutral. And obviously being passed over as being one of the televised games, I was outraged to begin with. And I thought, no, that means that we've got a Saturday 3:00 kickoff. So I'm actually sort of over that now and kind of quite happy with it. But obviously, as you said, we've beat them twice. A record against them in the last six is amazing. We've got 4 wins, only 1 defeat and a draw against them in our last 6 games against them. So we kind of have we definitely have the sign over them just now. So going to that, the same as I said against Dundee United, we shouldn't be fearing anything against them. The only problem I see is that obviously because we've got them the following week in the league as well, I hate when you have to sort of do double headers with teams sort of in the league and in the cup, because they tend to be 2 completely different games. And it's obviously you want a cup run, but you definitely want the 3 points. And luckily we're not asked to kind of choose one, but you're hoping that we can sort of keep it up against them for the 2 games. But certainly in the cup game, you just hope to come through tomorrow night, having done well, come away without any injuries, go into the cup game and absolutely turn them over, and then kind of I do them again the following Saturday. But it's one that kind of I always think Scottish Cup games are just that wee bit extra special, and as you say, kind of 3:00 on a Saturday, it's going to be brilliant.
Pepe, much sad in that one. It's, as I say, it's not ideal discussing a game before you've actually played the game in front of it, but it will be a big occasion.
Oh, I totally agree, and it's just good to have Jaffa on. Obviously, me and Andy P used to love the reminiscing of the 91, and I think having experienced that, although I was only 11 at the time when we won the Scottish Cup, to know what that feels like, I think it's a different feeling for even what I experienced it to you, because I've been there the day after the Cup, experienced it as a kid, and I just want to relive that with my boy now, like my dad did with me. There's so many memories like that are so vivid from that game. There were books come out about it, there were DVDs, everything. The players, there's players in that 91 Cup winning team that Motherwell fans would probably never mention in the same, like the likes of Ian Angus. Niall Holt is an absolute, he was a great player anyway, But I don't think he would be remembered in such glowing terms. And it's just, that gets me every single time. When you see some, if you look down south, the FA Cup gets looked upon, the big teams don't really treat it with the respect that it's due. And I'm just glad as fans and as a club that we treat it with the respect that it is due, because it really is. I mean, for us, roughly, there's a couple, maybe 10 years either side of us each, but at the end of the day, it would be great for us all as fans to celebrate that. And every game in the Cup for me is special. The one thing that I did notice when we were fortunate enough to get to the League Cup final and the Scottish Cup final, the difference between the League Cup and the Scottish Cup for me was phenomenal. So I'm sure you can tell with the passion in my voice that I'm looking forward to on Saturday.
Guys, there's quite a few other bits going on that I'd like to talk about just before we wrap up. There was quite a public social media debate. It was described in the tabloid press as it was a heated argument. It certainly wasn't that, but a Celtic supporter on Twitter basically casting up the fact that there was a lot of empty seats in the Motherland on Sunday, just as it is for most visits of Rangers or Celtic, to be honest. The argument from their side that there was lots of Celtic fans that couldn't get tickets and it would make financial sense for the club to sell these vacant seats to Celtic supporters, which is all fine and dandy, I suppose, if you disregard the fact that you've got season ticket holders in each of those stands that pay good money to go every game and sit in their usual seats. It's an argument as long as time, I suppose. I can't remember a time where there's not been some sort of debate about that whole firm and their allocation for these matches. I think we've got the right conclusion just now, where our home fans aren't sharing, particularly main stand, which is really narrow, and the concourses, there's no chance that you can segregate them. It's a recipe for disaster, essentially. They've changed that up. It seems to be working, albeit we are running at what I would imagine is a bigger loss than we used to. It'll be very helpful when those extra sections of the south stand are no longer required as part of the red zone requirements, and we can get an extra, I imagine there must be about 700 or 800 seats in that section that can be freed up for visiting supporters. Overall, though, Pepe, it's a difficult one, because you're having to weigh up financial gain against your own supporters. But as a fan-owned club, surely there's only one outcome. And if they're going to ask the members of the Welsh Society to vote as well and what their opinions on it are, there's only going to be one outcome there.
Yep. I've never ever been in the main stand for a Rangers or Celtic. In fact, I think I've only ever been in the East Stand for a game. So I can't say that I know what it's like, but I can only imagine it must be absolutely horrendous. I think it's overemphasised as well with the fact that we've got the gap down the bottom of the South Stand. But at the end of the day, tough shit. Alan Burrows, I read his comments on Twitter, and it would be a short-term financial windfall, but the long-term plan was to appease Motherwell fans. I can remember being absolutely disgusted when Celtic fans were in the David Cooper stand. And to be honest with you, would it make more sense that the stadium's jam-packed? Do I want that? Absolutely not. Why give the opposition that extra advantage where you're getting their bile songs? Again, and I'm going to call Celtic out in this, because they like to be the victims quite a lot. But I heard chants about David Cooper again on Sunday, which for me is absolutely disgusting, but that's another debate. But for me, Motherwell called out the right decisions, as they normally do now with things like that. So well done to them for sticking by their guns. It was quite funny coming in. I was a wee bit, maybe just 5 minutes before kickoff, coming in, and I thought, Oh God, look at the amount of Celtic fans selling tickets, but it was just them all standing with 20 quid notes in their hand. So it was quite humorous seeing them all freezing, knowing for a fact they weren't going to get in.
Jaffa, the catch 22 comes when you get scenarios like we had recently with Tony Watt, even to a certain extent the offer that we gave to Ricky Lamy seemed to be one that Dundee couldn't only just match, they could go better than. And you see players being lost to other teams that you would imagine or you would regard as to be of a similar stature to ourselves in the league. There maybe needs to be more ways of working around this in terms of the society being more viable and maybe being more forward-facing. We're just at the end of a time where we've unveiled record profits on the back of an exceptionally difficult set of circumstances last season with fans not being in the ground. But we still had the big uptake in season tickets. We had a massive club record transfer fee for David Turnbull. So a couple of positives there that would have definitely boosted the bank balance. It's maybe time that the fan ownership model and the Welsh Society, with their recent restructuring of a new representative that's heading it up, they hit a wee bit of a reset button and give another push. So it does kind of help us in these times of shortfall. And I'm sure that if the fans are more engaged with it again, because I think that it has maybe went a bit off the grid in recent times, and maybe needs an extra push and maybe get people reinvested again.
I definitely think there's more that the Welsh Society can do. I kind of got the email and saw on social media that they're looking for input from the fans or kind of for their kind of upcoming soiree. But I think kind of the Welsh Society need to engage more with the fans, because it's obviously, I've been a member of the Welsh Society right for the kickoff. And to be honest, it's sort of in recent times, it seems to be that they try to do an auction and kind of give you a wee bit of news about people in and around the club, but they never actually kind of, I don't expect to be consulted on signings. I don't expect to be kind of brought in and kind of on kind of wage discussions or anything like that, but it would be nice to know a wee bit more about what was going on so I did feel a wee bit more involved in it. And to be honest, I've got absolutely no idea how much we bring in, if they let us know a wee bit more about what was going on, that kind of, if I could maybe kind of look at restructuring what I put in, maybe I could sort of go to a wee bit more. But when it comes to like Tony Watt and stuff like that, I think kind of the Tony Watt situation kind of came down to Motherwell's wage structure, and I don't want us to abandon the wage structure for anybody. It's if Tony Watt's kind of getting offered double what he was on at Motherwell to go and play with Dundee United, then 100% he's going to go and do that. With it being so local, I was hoping that we would keep him to the end of the season, and he would get a move down south. Obviously, kind of the season that he was having with Motherwell was his best season, goal scoring wise, in his career. Obviously, can I say earlier on, we're previewing the Dundee United game, he's now gone 9 games without a goal. That could have happened if he stayed with us. So I think we were right to kind of cash in on him, and kind of, obviously, we offered him what we could offer him. I think we probably offered him the absolute maximum that we could. But when it comes down to the kind of this issue about the Celtic fans can bite me. They really can. It's when they're kind of complaining about us sort of supposedly locking them out of Fir Park when there's seats in the home end. This is a team that kind of that wouldn't stream games at their home ground to away fans during COVID, and obviously have kind of locked away fans out of their home ground since we went back. So the fact that they get as many tickets as they do, obviously we're not going to lock them out, but kind of I think Alan Burrows kind of really approached made his answer on Twitter kind of very diplomatic, explained the kind of situation from the Motherwell point of view really well. and obviously did the end in his tweets with Gerrit Rooney, which, you know, I don't think I could have done without doing it. I don't think I could have sort of got involved in it, but I think he kind of laid out the kind of absolutely correct from a Motherwell point of view. It's when they did give away the Cooper Stand to Celtic and Rangers. I was a season ticket holder in the East Stand at the time. I'm now a season ticket holder in the Cooper Stand, and it's if they were to say to me next season, right, for the Old Firm games, we're going to move you into the East Stand. To be honest, I would have to actually I would start questioning kind of whether it's worthwhile, because it's now my seat. I've sat in it for a couple of seasons now, and I don't see why we should sort of go down that route of giving away a stand, because as Pepe said, it's given them an advantage. It's given them kind of they've already probably got more fans in the stadium than Motherwell do for the game, and giving them a further stand and putting even more kind of pressure on us at home. It's just beyond the pale to think about. The kind of worrying thing is that kind of one of the things that Burrows had said, obviously kind of one of the points that had been made to him, and he pointed out that there's sort of at times there's 60% of the kind of season ticket holders not going to the Rangers and Celtic games, and that's because of what happens at Rangers and Celtic games.
Returning here after very frustrating technical issues, thanks guys for your patience there. Jeff, I think that's a really good point, in the sense that short-term gain could cause a fair degree of long-term damage to the supporters. If they were to be inconvenienced or to be moved for other supporters of other teams to take the place in the ground, not in the ground, in their seats, essentially, I think that would cause a fair degree of ill will, which would only cause long-term suffering at a time where our own supporters aren't going to these games. They're put off for a number of reasons, and many of it's understandable. As a family club, a lot of families go to games together, and they don't fancy those occasions in the slightest. So, yeah, I can completely see it from their point of view, and I can't see it at all from their point of view, to be perfectly honest. And it's encouraging that time and time again, Alan Burrows comes out and is so clear and so concise. And he puts his point across in a way that I think gains a degree of respect from not only our supporters, but a vast amount of respect from supporters of other clubs as well. Tremendous job.
Well, it certainly does a good job. I think we could have a whole podcast concentrating on positives and negatives at the Welsh society. But I think what I would completely wholeheartedly agree with Jaffa is that I don't really know enough that goes on. I don't want to be making decisions on what catering companies we use, or I agree signings, but for this kind of fan-owned club, it's your club. To be honest with you, the only difference that I see is the money that comes at my bank. I don't really know what it goes to. I think the easiest option would be that they have a general meeting that we're all invited to, or an open night or whatever, not to drum up new membership, but for existing or members that's been in it from the start, like myself, Jaff, and probably yourself, Andy. But I don't really know enough of the workings. I mentioned when Tony Watt went away, I agree that we shouldn't burst our wage structure, but the Tony Watt situation is completely different for Ricky Lamy. If Dundee can completely out-muscle us for a player like Ricky Lamy, that's when the alarm bells start to ring a wee bit kind of concerned for me. Now, is it that they valued him far higher than us? I don't know. But it's situations like that, if we're a fan-owned club, that I would like to know, not the ins and outs of the figures, but is it the case that we're so far behind? Because if that's the case, then is it working?
Well, we'll take that on a bit further in the next couple of weeks. Just the final one, and it's a bit more lighthearted than the rest of the podcast. Today, Lee Griffiths put pen to paper till the end of the season with Falkirk in League One, dashing any chances that he would ever turn out in a Motherwell shirt. Thank fuck for that, Pepe.
Well, I think that it divides opinion. I think it's, if you take away his personal life, as I've already said, he's a talent. I think that the Falkirk move is a brave one for him. And I think there was some Motherwell fans that would have taken him. To include myself in that, half my brain says yes, half my brain says no. I look at it from a footballing point of view. And at the time, he's a player that I think could have done well for us. But morally, I'm glad that the club haven't went down that route. But we'll see how it goes. If he'd signed for Motherwell, would have supported them. I would have. And that was the kind of point I was trying to make. But I knew that you were going to come back to me with that at some point. I'd like to hear Jaffa's opinion in that.
Yeah, on you go, Jaffa.
Okay. I heard he's talking about this sort of a couple of weeks ago in the podcast, and it's to be honest, it's, I could see your point that you were talking about kind of needing somebody else who is a proven goal scorer. And it was my opinion that kind of Griffiths has only shown sort of brief spells at Dundee that he's still sort of capable of it. And it's I just kind of thought he's a player that you'd have loved to have taken maybe a couple of seasons ago. But I think he was just too much of a risk because there's certainly sort of off-field problems going on with him. Whatever they may be, hopefully he's able to kind of get that sorted. But kind of, I think it really has affected his play. But kind of like Pepe said, kind of if Alexander had kind of thought, I'll take a plunge on him, I wouldn't have been happy about it. But kind of if he came in and started putting the ball in the net, you know, at the end of the season, got us into Europe, kind of then sort of. All of the kind of thoughts, all the things that he's done in the past, and kind of all his behavioural issues, kind of goes out the window. But I'm kind of glad that we didn't go down that route. And I have to be honest, it's a kind of thought. He's probably kind of found the level that he needs. He may be a success with Falkirk, but Falkirk are such a basket case of a club that kind of it might be an absolute disaster there, and it might be the end of him. Because obviously, kind of you see the things that go on off field with Falkirk, and kind of like their general meeting and stuff like that was an absolute joke. And I'm not entirely sure that kind of the structure's there to support Lee Griffiths and what he needs. But good luck to him. I'm glad that he's not going to come back and face us at any point for the rest of the season. Put it that way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it transpires. I saw kind of comparisons on social media today to Raith Rovers and their transfer activity last week. I think we're talking about two completely different situations, it must be said there, but we'll not dwell on that one. Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got for just now, but I'd like to take the chance to thank you both for your time tonight, especially yourself, Jaffa. It's been a pleasure having you on, mate.
It was a pleasure to be on, mate. Anytime you kind of you need somebody to talk some utter nonsense about Motherwell, I'm your man.
Well, that's what we do on a weekly basis, mate. So one more voice can't hurt. Pepe, thank you very much for your time, pal.
Hi, thanks again. Enjoyed not being the older one in the podcast tonight, and getting some nostalgia in the go, talking about Dougie Arnott's and stuff.
So we'll be back after the cup game, hopefully. In good spirits. It's been a while since we recorded in the back of victory, but I'm sure it's just around the corner. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back following the Aberdeen Cup game. Until then, thank you and goodbye.